From the latest hip-hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these corona-infested streets. So as you can see, my voice is pretty much back to normal. The raspiness has left the building. Sorry to disappoint those of you who loved the raspy voice. But I'm feeling a lot better. I'm about 5 weeks post-Rona. Still having issues with the deep breathing and this random like smell thing going on. I'm hoping that that goes away after a while, but it's still here. And sometimes I do have to take a very deep breath after speaking for, you know, short amounts of time. But either way, I'm alive. I'm well, seemingly well, and we're moving forward. So I really hope you guys had a great weekend. It was blazing hip hop and R&B in these New York City streets over the last couple of days. I love the idea of summer, but I do not like the heat. I am a 60 to 75 degree weather girl. Anything more than that, anything 80 something is too much for me. But either way, hope you guys enjoyed and at least took advantage of the sun. So, unfortunately, we have received some celebrity sad news this week. Our beloved Paul Mooney, comedian, writer, actor, has died at the age of 79 after suffering a heart attack. Mooney had been around for a minute, most notably as a writer for The Richard Pryor Show, Sanford and Son, Good Times, In Living Color, and my favorite, Chappelle Show, and so much more. He surely will be missed. So today we have a really great show with an amazing guest by the name of Jay Sharps, the barber. Jay Sharps is going to talk about what it's like to be a barber and how barbering is more than just getting a haircut. I think a lot of us just see our barbers and our hairstylists, you know, just for what they do, cutting hair, styling hair, and then that's it, right? We don't really think about them unless it's time to get our hair did. But there's so much more to the barber. There's so many layers. You know, they're therapists, they're, you know, makeshift physicians, they're coaches. There's so many different aspects, and they wear so many hats because they're dealing with the general public, right? So we're going to have a conversation about what it is to be a barber, right? And then we're going to just talk a little bit about how the pandemic also impacted the beauty industry, because we talk a lot about how the pandemic impacted the restaurant industry, but we don't talk about how our beauticians and barbers and nail techs and eyebrow ladies and eyelash people, how they were actually affected. And so we're definitely going to talk about that. So you definitely want to keep it locked. But before we get into the meat of the show, you know we have our preliminary. So it is now time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Popping on fleek, is it lit?
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is sorry, not sorry. Now, I know a lot of you guys say this, have heard it at some point, but some people are still wondering, what does it really mean? So typically used to signify that a speaker does not care whether their behavior emotionally upsets someone else. It can also be the term used to acknowledge that the speaker's behavior could upset someone, but the speaker stands behind their behavior. First example is slaps book out of someone's hand. Oh, you were reading that? Sorry, not sorry. Second example, in a cooking competition, I saw her drop her dish on the floor. I could have helped her, but I'm running out of time. Sorry, not sorry. Now, this sorry, not sorry thing, I mean, I've used this phrase before, more so in jest, but a lot of people actually use it in all seriousness. And it comes off a little jerky, right? I mean, at least to me, it can come out a little jerky. So I don't know. Again, I've used it in jest. I've used it maybe jokingly, but there are people who really are out here, you know, displaying bad behavior and saying sorry, not sorry. I don't know. I think it's a bit jerky. I think it's a bit not arrogant. I can't think of the word. There's jerky. I don't know. We'll just stick with jerky for now. But for those of you who really wanted the true essence of what sorry, not sorry meant, that is the definition. It's really to signify that somebody doesn't care about their behavior and how their behavior affects someone else. Like they just don't care, right? So that's pretty much what the definition. So it is now time for our Haitian word or phrase of the week. So this week's Haitian word or phrase of the week is t'en prie. T'en prie means please. Many people are a little confused by this because they're like, wait, I thought that please was s'il vous plaît. Well, s'il vous plaît is also how you say please. However, it's French. It's a French phrase. S'il vous plaît is French. However, if you guys don't know, Haitian Creole is heavily based on French. And so there are a lot of words that we will use, a lot of phrases that we will use in Haitian Creole that are straight up French, like no mix, no chop, no nothing. So for me personally, I grew up using s'il vous plaît when I want to say please. I did not grow up using t'en prie, but t'en prie is the Creole, the Haitian Creole way of saying please. So if you are saying s'il vous plaît, that's fine. It's, you know, I consider it Haitian Creole, you know, lingo, vernacular, whatever. But if you're trying to stick to the roots, then t'en prie would be your word. So it is now time for one of my favorite sections of this show. It is now time for the big up of the week. Watch it. You feel big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. So this week's big up goes to the graduating class of 2021. Congratulations, class of 2021, for overcoming this crazy obstacle called the coronavirus pandemic. You guys graduated amidst all of the obstacles and the challenges that presented itself. And you guys should pat yourselves on the back. You guys should be so super proud of yourselves. I'm super proud of you. It was amazing to see all of the graduation posts this week. A lot of my friends even graduated from higher education this week. And I had some friends who had their kids graduate from kindergarten. And especially for the babies, I think it was just such a hard time these last 2 years, really, for our kids. And I'm happy that this year things have gotten a little better. Like last year, my son, he graduated from the eighth grade, and all I got was a pre-recorded YouTube video that just really showed the pictures of all of the kids. They didn't get to walk across the stage. They didn't get to go to prom. They didn't get to do a lot of things. And I really felt bad for like the high school seniors who graduated without a prom, without, you know, senior week, without graduation even. I am happy that this year a lot of the institutions were able to at least create some sort of graduation ceremony. So at least the kids got a little something this year. But congratulations to all of you. And I also want to congratulate those of you who are celebrating anniversaries. So this year, actually May 21st, I celebrated my 10-year anniversary of graduating from law school. And I had a couple of friends who had posted their 10-year anniversary from graduating dental school, medical school. So also shout out to all of my people who have entered the 10-year club and we're 10 years out of our professional schools. So congratulations to you guys, too. So with every high, you guys know that there is a low. And so this week's Womp Womp of the Week, I'm actually going to leave it to the people. You know, here and there, I will do that where I will ask you guys whether or not you think this individual should be the Womp Womp of the Week. So I don't know if you guys are aware of the DJ Funk Flex and Charlamagne the God fiasco. It's been all over social media, all over the interwebs. So apparently DJ Funk Flex has gotten a lot of flack for playing the audio of a mother and daughter alleging that Charlamagne the God drugged and raped this young woman 17 years ago. Now, the case involving Charlamagne was addressed and settled, and apparently DJ Funk Flex, aka Petty Boots, is said to have some sort of agenda as to why he is involved, why he is even concerned about Charlamagne the God. Now, apparently, there was, I guess, a prior beef between Charlamagne the God and another individual by the name of Kevin Hunter. This guy called Kevin Hunter apparently called out Charlamagne, and he threatened to expose him via the Funk Flex show. And Funk Flex took the bait and released the audio for the world to hear. And so many are wondering, what is up with Funk Flex, right? What is, like, why did you have to engage in this tomfoolery between Kevin Hunter and Charlamagne the God? What is your ulterior motive in this situation? Now, many people are saying that the reason that they're upset with Funk Flex is because he is participating in the teardown of the Black community, right? I mean, I'm not going to say that I am the biggest fan of Charlamagne the God. I don't know if I always agree with what he says, but he does say a lot of things that make sense. I do enjoy The Breakfast Club. I tune in as often as I can. I watch the clips on Instagram. So I am a fan of the actual show. Charlamagne, obviously, you know, he's not somebody that I can say I always agree with. But at the end of the day, he's a Black man. He's doing what he has to do. You know, he's achieving new heights. He's successful. And many are saying that, you know, Funk Flex is just a hater. He's a hater. And because maybe he's not as successful as Charlamagne, he's wanting to tear him down. He's engaging in tactics that's tearing another Black man down. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think Funk Master Flex should be the Womp Womp of the Week? Do you believe that he went too far by, you know, siding with this Kevin guy? And even if he does believe Kevin, even if he believes, which he actually states that he says that he believes the mother and daughter, and that he does not believe that Charlamagne the God is innocent. This did happen 17 years ago. There was an adjudication process. And I believe that there was even a subsequent article that came out to show that the 2018 police report revealed that Charlamagne's DNA was not found on the alleged rape victim. And so it's very interesting to me to see how now this is coming back up again, and that Funk Flex is kind of at the core of the controversy by releasing this audio. What was he trying to accomplish? What is his agenda? Is he now all of a sudden like the champion of all causes? You know what I mean? So let me know what you think. You can slide up in my DM at According to RP on Instagram. You can send an email at AccordingToRP@gmail.com and let me know your thoughts if Funk Flex deserves the Womp Womp of the Week. So we are now moving on to the meat of the show. All right, everyone, I'm here with my very special guest, Jay Sharps. Jay Sharps, hey. Say hello.
Hello, hello, everyone.
So thank you so much for making the time to be a guest on the According to RP platform. I just want you to take this time to tell the people a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what you do.
No problem. First and foremost, I'm very much I appreciate being on the platform. I'm very happy to be here. I am a mobile barber and I live in the Bronx. I've been cutting hair for quite some time now, about 22 years. I work with a lot of brands like Kiehl's, Clinique, Dolce & Gabbana at times, different Aqua de Palma, you know, Saks, you know, Barney's. I've attended to a lot of malls too. So Macy's, you know, I work with the kids, do a lot of events with kids for the community. Every Wednesday as well, I cater to the seniors at a senior home. So, you know, I've been at this for a very long time and this is pretty much my profession.
All right. So there's a lot to talk about. I think that a lot of times when people think about barbers, they just think about, oh, the man or woman who cuts hair, and then they kind of leave it at that. They don't really know the position, you know, the title of being a barber is much more than just the cutting of hair. So I want you to kind of talk about, like, what is it like being a barber? Like, what's the life of a barber?
It depends on the individual, how they perceive it. Like, to me, it's like the most funnest job ever in the world. I love to do what I do. It's like, you get to wear a lot of hats. I mean, and that alone just is very exciting, just to hear people out and, you know, help people out, especially mentally to us, and given the opportunity to bring life to people sometimes, even though when they're down, like you can give them a haircut, they come in there, or they're feeling a certain way, and then you know they look at themselves in the mirror after getting a haircut, and it's a life changing experience. I mean, you know, they're you could give them a bit of feeling like they're energized just by the haircut itself. So I love to do what I do. It's an amazing job.
And I totally agree with you there, because myself, you know, whenever I get my hair done, or if I get, you know, makeup or whatever it is a transformational experience, right?
To just
feel good, to feel different. And people love going to, like, you know, get services done for themselves. So I definitely agree with you there that it's definitely a transformational experience. People definitely feel like they're a new person when they come out of the barber chair, especially men, right? I feel like, you know, if they're going anywhere, they need to have that fresh cut, or at least that fresh lineup.
Definitely. I mean, most of the times I get this a lot, like, they'll just get a haircut for the weekend, or maybe at the end of the week, so they could start, you know, Monday, going to, you know, start their week with a fresh haircut, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're like, I don't have anything to do today. But you know what? They look at themselves and they're like, I'm going out. I'm going to do something. I'm going to go somewhere. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you got me looking fresh. So, see, that's things like that I love to do, because it's an honor, I guess. You know, it's very, can't find the word now, but it's very, very, like, it's a great feeling just to know that someone, you know, is that excited about your services, let's say, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's very touching. You know, I think, you know, that you can do that to someone, you know, so.
Now, you mentioned services, and I want to talk about that a little bit. I kind of want to know, like, how has services changed from, let's say, 10, 15 years ago, right? Because before, people used to go to barbershops or have a barber just, you know, cut their hair, line them up, or whatever the case is. But now, you know, I'm seeing a lot more services being offered by barbers. Like, I'm seeing, you know, beard washes, steams. I mean, barbers are even putting on male weaves now. They're installing male weaves.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's become more of a grooming experience. So if you could just talk about, like, the difference in the evolution of services within the barbering industry.
Yeah, definitely. In my perspective, evolution always changed, right? Everything, it went from, you know, going back in the days, if you want, it's like we were surgeons, you can say, at one point, right? And then things got, you know, a little simpler, that just cut your hair, shaves, and that's it, right? But it was still viewed as a very good profession. Then things shifted a little bit. It got to the point that I view it as it declined a bit, because it got too simple, and it got too how would I explain this? It got too simple, and it got like uncaring, I guess, because it's just like to me, it became like a sweatshop. Like, okay, yeah, I come here, cut hair, and then I leave. You know what I mean? Like, or how many people I have to cut? And then it got very competitive with shops, you know, competing with other shops that, you know, the prices are lower than the other location, and everything just went downhill from there for a bit, right? At first, we as a culture, we played a big part in culture. I mean, even like back in the days, as far as like Big Daddy Kane with the flat tops and the rugbys and all that stuff, right? That was in, you know, it's kind of like a stock market. It goes up and then we just taper down and then we go back up again. So I think we were at a flat line, you know, at one point, and I would say maybe about 5 or 7 years ago. I'm just coming up with a number, and then we started rising a bit. So I think now we're realizing that, most barbers are realizing that the more service you provide for someone, it's more bang for your buck. You know what I mean? You make more money. Because if you think about it back then, and maybe as a few years ago, haircuts was like $15, $12. Like how is that sustainable for a person to live off of then? You know, you have to pay your rent towards the chair, and some, you know, the average is just about $250 a week. So you'll literally have to be there from like 8 o'clock in the morning to like, sometimes I've seen guys stay till one or two in the mornings open cutting hair. I mean, to me, it's kind of like a sweatshop, like, you know, and, but things gotten better, you know, so far. So, I mean, that's why I went ahead and chose to go mobile in private, because, you know, it comes a point when you're like, I don't want to brag that to say that, you know, I've cut 60 individuals a day, 60 clients a day, or 40 clients a day. I mean, you know, like they always say, you got to, you know, work smarter, not harder. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it just wasn't sustainable. And that's why at one point, like, a lot of our people's Caribbeans and came over and got a job, and, you know, they were willing to just keep that price suppressed, you know what I mean, for a very long time. And a lot of people use it was a revolving door too. A lot of people used it for, you know, until they get a 9-to-5. Once they get a 9-to-5, they leave.
Yeah.
So it was, the structure was all broken up, and for a very long time, and it wasn't, you know, the profession wasn't taken as serious. I mean, to this day, I mean, we're somewhat taken seriously now, but then maybe 7 years ago, but still not enough. I mean, you got hairstylists that gets more respect than an actual barber.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
I can attest to that as somebody who's been going to hairstylists for the greater portion of my life. I do want to touch on, you know, just like, the fees, right? You had mentioned, you know, at there was a point in time where barbers were getting maybe $12 a cut, $15 a cut. I do remember. Right. I have a son, so, you know, I used to take him to the barber shop, so I'm, you know, familiar with what happens there. But, you know, I always find that one thing I'm hearing from barbers and even some hairstylists, it's hard to get the community to be on the same page with price increases, right? Like, you'll have a lot of people who are like, you know, $30 for a haircut. Like, what is this?
Right.
And they make it a big deal. So how do you deal with that? And how have you been able to successfully really advocate and demand what you're worth, you know, in a community that's, you know, used to paying $10 for a haircut? And probably still do in some places, because there are barbers who might be accepting that.
Right.
How do you deal with that?
That's always been a tough battle. Even when I first started, I started only charging $5 from the price that I left charging the barbershop. But over time, I noticed that you'll have to kind of like leave that element a bit in order to make a name for yourself. A lot of barbers ask me that, like, how do you increase the prices? It's your appearance too. It's how you perceive yourself. And, you know, like as far as Instagram, how you promote yourself, what type of things you're posting however you're perceiving to people, like, and that's a big thing. A lot of people don't understand that, you know, like for instance, I'll give you a great idea. I had an event for Macy's, a 3-day event, right? They gave me the third floor, right? And they made a little, it looked like a section of a barbershop, but kind of like an old school barbershop. I had singers there singing, croquette, those old school barbers. They used to sing, I forgot the name of them. But anyway, it was a nice event, right? And G-Star, someone from corporate came up to me and said, hey, I really like your appearance. I like how you handle yourself. I see how you present yourself and your haircuts is nice. They offered me to do an event with them. And she said, well, there was two barbers there before that I had the same idea, but the way they came, the way they looked, they came in jeans and sneakers and stuff like that at an event. And that's not kind of like what they were planning to see. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's a prime example of that. I mean, if you want to call something a profession, I mean, you also have to look professional as well. How else you would get respected? How else could you say, hey, not only, you know, based on your skills and what you have to offer, but it's also it starts with your appearance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think that a lot of barbers may not quite get that because, you know, I've been in and out of several barbershops and they're kind of just like, you know, whatever, like here I am. Right.
Right. Like wearing the skelly. I'm sorry, but like wearing the skellies, their pants sagging down.
Yeah.
Like you can't be in an environment like that because what happens from what I've, and again, this is the way I perceived it. We made it into a hangout spot. Mm-hmm, and yeah. Once you become a hangout spot and a cool dude and step away from the professionalism to for people to understand that is a business, then you have a problem.
Yeah, I totally agree with that because I think for the most part, the barbershops that I've been in have been a hangout spot with the multiple TVs, you know, maybe the
loud music.
Yeah, the bar in the back. Yeah, definitely a hangout spot.
So once you have that atmosphere, right, how could you turn around and say, hey, you know, we're gonna up the prices? And that's not just one aspect. The other aspect is the whole community has to change and set a different standard, period. Like, you know, you can't have one barbershop charging 30 and then across the street is 17 or 12.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not gonna happen. But then again, it's what you have to offer. And I think when people start realizing that, you know, that you have to take a different approach and everyone sees that things are changing, you have no choice. I mean, look at the gas stations. Now, right now, it's what, about an average of $3.65.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's kicking and screaming, complaining about it. But guess what? You're paying that price if you need gas, right?
Yeah.
So when it's all around the sector and like within the whole profession and the people just say, hey, this is what we're charging because this is what it is, you know, because based on, you know, your services as well. So all of those things are part of the elements, you know, that has to come together in order for us to, you know, to get on, you know, for everyone to get on board and understand. Because see, our community, let's just say, a lot of people say, well, you know, we don't have that much money and everything else. But our community is the same community that are wearing like $600 sneakers, $600 belts. You know what I mean? Wearing Christian Dior brands and stuff like that, not that I'm advertising them. But you know what I mean? They're wearing all these things. They're paying cable bills up to $300 and some odd, you know, because they have the gold package. And now that went away a little bit, but people are still spending money and they're saying no. But because they're saying like I have a couple of people that I can, how much you charge? And I tell them about my price and products and services. And I can't afford that. And you know, I say, well, I wouldn't, don't lower yourself to those standards. I know you could afford it, but you just choose not to pay that. And a lot of people say, you know what, you're right. You know, I'd rather someone say, you know what, I don't choose not to pay that price. And a lot of people would just be like, no, I can't afford that. You can.
Yeah, it's a choice. And I totally agree with you. Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And I think, you know, for me, where I realize that is, you know, eyebrows. I'm very particular about who touches my eyebrows, which is why I do not get them done very often. Right. And so in the beginning, you know, a lot of us, we went to some of these Asian nail salons where, you know, they were charging like $5 to get your eyebrow done. Then I think they upped it to like $6, right? But after a while, you would see like, oh, maybe your eyebrows are starting to disappear. Like there was something going on because you were going for the very cheap quality. And so I remember one day I was like, I can't go back to the Asians because I just don't, you know, like I feel like the quick wax thing, the system that they use is just not good for my eyebrows. And they all have the same system. And so one of my friends, she's a Jamaican girl. She's like, well, I get mine done, you know, at a black owned spot in the city. I'm like, well, how much do you pay? She was like, it's $50. And I was like, you know, at first I'm like,
right. You went from $5 to $50.
$5 to $50? Like there's not even a middle. Right. But her eyebrows were always on point and she was able to stretch them out. So I was like, you know what, Rita, let me go try this. And it was crazy for me to even tell people that I was spending that much money on my eyebrows. But when they saw the results, the health of my eyebrows, you know, so it's about quality as well too, when you spend this money, but I had to realize that for myself. But I think it's the same thing, you know, that you're saying is that, you know, it's not that you can't, cause you will always find the money for things that you really
want.
It's because you don't want to.
Exactly.
But do you,
and I could see their expressions just look at me and say, you know what, you're right. But see, that alone changes someone's perspective of how they look at it. You know what I mean? Like, wait a minute, that's actually true. You know, I stay advocating that, like, listen, you know, but it is, you get what you pay for, you know? And I think in the future, when you see someone walking around with a nice fade, like a really nice fade or a nice haircut, it's going to say, oh, you know, they spent a lot of money for that haircut. Mm-hmm. That's how I envision the future, because it's just the way it is. Like, you know, it's the shortchanging now. And it's funny because we shortchange ourselves. You see how you said you had to go down Manhattan, downtown to get that service, because that's what people are tending to do. Now you have to move your business somewhere else instead of in the community.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that same person will go and open one in the community and people look at her like she's crazy. Oh, that person is like, they're crazy. Yeah. Like $50. I'm not spending $50. Why? Because they know across the street is $5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. They have to go.
And you could sing them. You could give them the list of, listen, I'll do this, 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 this. No one wants to hear that. They're like, why if I could pay $5?
Yeah. And you know what? You definitely brought up a really big point, because I'm like, that is true. A lot of the higher end, you know, beauty services do move to like Midtown, Fifth Avenue, and they're forced to pay these crazy rents only so that they can, justify their charge of like the $50, $60, because, you know, if you do it on, you know, the Flatbush Junction, they're going to look at you, like you said, they're like, crazy. Like, how am I going to pay you $50 when literally there's 15 eyebrow spots that'll charge me between 5, maybe 10 the max.
But wait, people from the community still go downtown to pay for something that's overpriced anyway, which is odd. When people go to the clubs and buy a bottle that's $30 at a liquor store, and it's overpriced to tenfold, not even more, like $250 at a club, like a bottle of Hennessy, like, and people will come out of pocket and pay it. But if you say to someone, hey, I went downtown to spend $50 on my eyebrows, they will go as far as calling you stupid.
Yep. bougie.
You're stupid for doing that. Or you're stuck up. Why? But it. But you wouldn't mind buying that Tory Burch bag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you're are you stupid for spending $5,000 on that? You see, and that's among ourselves that we have to fix in the community. But the reason is because we don't put out the value of what we do.
Yes.
And that's the problem, you know.
So how do we do that then? How do we get the how do barbers and the people in the beauty industry, how do they, you know, showcase the value of their services?
Everybody has to be on board. You can't just fix it. You can't fix one leg and leave all three. You know what I mean? Or you can have three legs fixed, but the fourth leg, the table will fall, right? Like everybody needs to be on board.
Yeah.
Everybody. I mean, and the thing is that every individual is going to do whatever they want. We have no unity. And the reason why we have no unity is because I believe this, that if I'm trying to voice out my opinion to everyone and no one's really paying attention, we're forced to do the only one thing we know to do is to do for ourselves. So that's why I don't work at a barbershop. I took my business to myself and said, hey, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. And I've been successful at it. You know, so that's just the name of the game. Like, that person maybe was from the community and said, you know, I'm gonna go downtown again, you know, to open up an eyebrow business or something like that, you know?
Now, is there because I'm hearing more so like there needs to be more of a collective effort amongst the barbers and maybe beauty people in order to really affect this change. Is there some sort of like barbers union or some sort of association that is?
We're all scattered. We're all scattered all over the place. Everyone's like a cluster doing here. Another cluster is focusing on something else. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, it's and remember, like every state is different. Upstate New York is different from here. They're more regulated than we are here. And the five boroughs, we're not regulated as much. And New Jersey's a bit more regulated. Connecticut is a bit more. It's just the five boroughs in New York. You got Brooklyn, Queens, you know, Staten Island. We're not regulated. Like, we're not being supervised to make sure that the structure is running the way it's supposed to be run, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a free fall. Like I always said, it's like a no man's land, you know, and that's what's hurting us, because when we do stuff like that, then it kills the profession. You know, like you see doctors, they'll uphold their profession. And if somebody goes out of line and gets a bad reputation, what is it? They go to the committee, I think, the health committee, and they'll get trialed there for their wrongdoing. And you could potentially lose your license for that.
Yeah.
So that it should be, we should have that same structure, unfortunately, because we can't be responsible enough. I'll just say some of us can and some of us can't, but as a title holder, like as a barber, we're not responsible enough to do that, you know, to uphold the structure and make sure that, you know, people, you know, all barbers, you know, if one barber does something, okay, that's that barber. But I mean, it's still the profession. It's bringing our profession down. Like, oh yeah, I heard a guy downstairs. He was in the corner just cutting hair. Is he a barber?
Yeah.
But people are going to think he's a barber. You can't have a doctor just doing practices on someone and he doesn't have the license. And that's a whole scam right there. Like, the news will be all over it and they'll crack down on it and forget about it. So it's the same thing. I think that we need to, you know, focus on things like that. You know, everybody that thinks individually is just going to keep doing what they got to do, and it's not helping anything.
Yeah.
You know, so
it definitely sounds like, I mean, at least within the NYC, the five boroughs, if there was some sort of association to get people all on board. But then I also see how sometimes people just want to do what they want to do, right? They want to open up their little thing in their basement and do whatever. So I can definitely see the challenges there. Now,
it's all about money. It's the business guy that opens a barbershop, 9 out of 10. I've been to shops that the owner wasn't even a barber.
Wow.
He just stays there all day, make sure the money is running correctly. That's all he's doing. And every time we try to give him an input as far as like, oh, this should change like this, mind you, We're giving the inputs because we're the barbers and he isn't. And at the end of the day, he makes his final decision or based on what he thinks is right. So how could you, it's your business, but you're not a barber. So how could you even view what we're trying to explain or envision what are we trying to improve or anything like that. So that's why I said it's a mess. It's a mess.
Yeah. Huh. Speaking of messes, COVID-19, right? I know that we talk about the restaurant industry being hit very, very hard with the pandemic. But, you know, I don't really hear many talk about the crazy impact that the pandemic had on the beauty industry. I mean, there was a complete shutdown, at least in New York City, with respect to, you know, all sorts of like services from, you know, barbering to nails and all sorts of stuff. So how were you impacted and how did you survive the pandemic? Or still surviving, really, because we're still in it.
Right. So I was impacted in a way that I kind of miss my clients and I miss cutting hair. I mean, I got my son, my 10-year-old now, you know, I could cut hair, but how many times could I cut his hair? You know what I mean? In a week or so it impacted me emotionally too, because I mean, I'm a mobile barber. So and barbers also socialize on the regular with people, you know, all day. I mean, that's what we do all day. We cut hair and we socialize. Mm-hmm. So not having that too was like, you know, it took a toll on our, you know, emotionally. But business wise, I kind of saw where it was going. So I was already preparing myself. And then, you know, I took this time to sit back and look at the things that I so-called didn't have time for and to improve my business, to just improve myself as a human being and to look at every aspect on how finances and everything else. So I, you know, I started reading. I went ahead and I did a pre-opening proposal and I sent it to Washington, D.C., to New York, you know, to the officials here in New York. And I worked on that. And then I went ahead. I was always into stocks and I wanted to go further into it too. So I started investing as well, which was the perfect time as well to invest because everything tanked. Mm-hmm. So everything was like on a 75% off sale. So I started doing that. And, you know, and working on how I am going to reopen. But I, you know, I just keep changing it, but because we're kind of open, but it's not really open. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
As I was going on, I was editing certain things and I didn't cut hair at all until maybe this ending of last year almost. But I was very selective on who I was servicing, you know. I did a lot of background. Like if I saw people on Instagram just going to parties and I'm not cutting that individual.
I feel you.
You know, I watched everything, what they were doing. I asked questions. If they left, you know, everything. If they left the state and stuff like that. So certain clients that I knew, like I had attorneys, you know, I had certain clients that I know that they needed their haircut for Zoom, let's say a meeting and stuff like that. You know, I took the necessary precautions to the extreme to make sure, you know, I was protected because at the end of the day, you got to protect yourself because I had to come home. So,
yeah no,
so it wasn't just for me. I mean, I seen mayhem stuff. Like I seen people just cutting outside still and no gloves, no mask, like it, you know, during the pandemic which was insane to me to see. And again, these things, these actions is what makes us look bad. You know, I know you got to hustle, but come on, at least if you're going to do anything, protect yourself, make sure you're everything is sanitized, gloves, everything that you need to do. But it, you know, from what I was seeing on social media, it was, you know, people are like, hey, I got to make ends meet.
Yeah. And I think it was really hard because it's true. Like, I mean, when the shutdown occurred, like it, you know, some businesses were totally disseminated, you know, because that was their livelihood or they were only used to barbering maybe in a particular way. I think a lot of people ended up, you know, being forced to be very creative in how they did their craft in order to survive. But I'm really glad that you were able
to, you know, to make it through, even though, like, again, we're still going through it, but hopefully the worst is behind us.
And another thing is, I'm sorry, like, a lot of people, a lot of barbers just were working under the books, not reporting their taxes, let's say.
True.
So for a person that's not reporting their taxes, they had a hard time getting unemployment, let's just say. They never worked for, like, the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They only worked as a barber. So in the IRS's eyes, it's like, well, you never worked at all because you never reported any taxes. So that's also what took place too, is that people were suffering over that. You know, they didn't have any savings, or, you know, it's the way we spend our money as well. As a culture, we have to, I mean, I hope with this event that happened, people kind of get on board a little bit more. But, like, you know, it's not all about spending money and trying to look fly every time, you know, trying to look real, you know, focus on the elegant side. If you're going to use elegance, you got to use it at the right appropriate time. You know, you got to use it to further your business. Let's say, you know, if you're going to do a presentation or something pertaining to your image, then that's a different story.
Yeah. So now, I know you had talked about the emotional component of really dealing, you know, with the pandemic, and you talked about just missing your clients and things like that. So I want to kind of shift the conversation now to the community aspect, right, of barbering. You know, again, this doesn't apply to every barber, because not everybody is, you know, concerned or at least really working in the community. But I know that you are one of the ones that are. And I wanted to kind of talk about your relationship with clients. You know, I've heard a lot of barbers say that they are a therapist, they're a doctor, you know, there are so many different things. They're coaches to their clients just because of the time spent and the regularity of these, you know, the clients in the chair. And so you guys develop a relationship of some sort. So I guess just talk about how you're able to really manage that, right? Because, you know, people go to school to become therapists. They go to school to become a doctor. And a lot of that conversation sometimes can weigh you down, right? You go home with the weight of the world because, you know, you had five clients talking about their issues and their problems and whatnot. So I just want to kind of get your take on the barber client relationship with respect to impact that you have on individuals' lives.
This in so many ways. Us barbers, we get information from individuals that maybe their own therapists probably don't get, you know, because we're a community, people feel comfortable giving us this information. Because it's sometimes we do need to talk. You know, some people, individuals who don't want to go to a therapist, let's say, because they figure, oh, I'm going to a therapist, that means I got issues, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they feel more comfortable relating to us because we're from the community and we're providing a service. So we have a lot of dark secrets from people, but, you know, it's locked in with us. Like, you know, we're not going to, mind you, we don't know their actual family sometimes, but we might know of them, but we have no connection. There's no reason for me to go to their family if something happened, or to their wives or something like that. So they feel comfortable just letting us know all of our, all of their problems. Not all, but, you know, when they feel comfortable. But for the youth as well, we get to talk. We have an opportunity, a front seat, to just talk to them and say, hey, you know, what are you doing? Well, how is this going and everything else? And we see them grow up throughout the years too, going through college and everything else. So you build this relationship with these clients, you know, that's could go for years. I mean, I have clients, maybe I've known them for like almost 11 years. Sometimes even longer. I know now I've given haircuts to their kids, you know, so it I think is a very honorable thing too, because it's like you get to get to know the insights of certain situations. And sometimes, hey, you might know the answer to that. And sometimes they might have an answer that you didn't have an answer for. Because sometimes we do give our problems to the clients too. Sometimes, like, hey man, look, this is messed up to happen, you know, last week, this, that, and they might have an answer for it. Or you have any relationship problems, you know, so it feeds each other.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, it's a good thing because you always need someone to talk to. But, you know, for us in the community, being Hispanic, Black, we feel more comfortable speaking to someone like, people feel comfortable speaking to us like that because we can relate to,
yeah.
We come from the community. We, you know, us Hispanics and Blacks, we've always been in the mix of things. So we could, who else is going to react? For a person to go downtown or something that's never been in the suburbs and in the urban areas, how would someone from the suburbs understand our problems in our urban area? I mean, it's not a neighbor. You know what I mean? He can't relate, or he or she can't relate. So the best person is from someone that comes from that, you know, that community or that demographic, mm-hmm. rather say. We could change a lot of things sometimes. We sometimes don't notice the type of power we have, I guess. I would say superpower because, you know, it's a very until you experience it, until you're in that position, mm-hmm. and when you notice that you have this superpower, I guess, like a superhero, it's amazing. It's very amazing. It changes lives sometimes. It could change our lives. Mm-hmm. So it's a life changing experience. Even though that might sound so dramatic, but it's actually. I mean, clients will sometimes tell you, like, man, listen, my barber knows a lot of things about me, you know? So, you know, I mean, I'm as well as hairstylists, like when you go get your hair done, if you've been getting your hair done from, you know, I'm sure you've told her or, you know, or he that, you know, how about certain things because you feel comfortable at that mm-hmm. point. So I think it's a very therapeutic thing for both of us. It's inexchangeable.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that, you know, with that being the case, because, of, you know, unfortunately in our communities, people are still a little hesitant on, you know, seeking out therapy, that going to the barber, going to the beauty salon, a hairstylist is therapeutic. I mean, I've found it therapeutic on many occasions just to be there, right? Just to like, right. just to go there with, even if I'm not saying much, but just being there was therapeutic. And I do think that individuals who are in the beauty industry who are providing services to the general public and particularly people in, you know, Black and in Hispanic communities, it's almost an added responsibility, in my opinion. Being somebody who's sympathetic and empathetic, it's important for those characteristics to be in that individual because you're dealing with people that are going through, you know, a variety of different things. And so I find that, you know, the rude barber, the rude hairstylist, or the one who's just not sympathetic or empathetic, it can sometimes become a disservice, and it could sometimes maybe cause more damage than it should. That's just kind of from my observation of just, you know, knowing how.
Definitely. I mean, mm-hmm. I've seen barbers have problems at home, but it's like every other job. You leave that outside. You know, you leave it at home. Whatever problems you have in your life or whatever it is, you leave that at home. Granted, we're humans, but we also have to be mindful that the person that's coming to us, the clients to get service, is probably having a great day. So imagine if, as a barber, I'm having a tough day and I reflect that. I mean, that's not a good thing. You have to leave that out anyway. That's on anything that you do in life. And I think a lot of barbers forget that. And this also, and then I don't want to demean barbers, is a lot of unexperienced and also education at the same time. Because for you to know customer service, I mean, not everybody knows how to do customer service. Mm-hmm. I was an operator as well, right? I was a telemarketing operator. And I remember when someone said, hey, if you're on the phone and you're pissed off, no matter how nice you're trying to sound, if you're pissed off, you got to get that out of your mouth. Because if you're pissed off, it's going to reflect on the phone.
Mm, yeah, it's true.
So imagine me saying, hey, how can I help you? But I still sound down. I could sound professional, anything. I could sound great. But the tone will reflect your attitude. So if you're giving someone service, sitting there and you're just like, I mean, standing there, just giving a haircut and all quiet, who wants to deal with an individual like that? That's not what mm-hmm. you came for. That's not what you came for. It's like a waitress. If a waitress could be, how can I help you? What would you like to eat? What would you like to order? You're like, what's wrong with her?
Yeah, exactly. Right?
So, you know, a lot of individuals don't have that. They have a lot of problems and a lot of things, you know, that, but you have to leave that at home. And that all, that's also professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I say professionalism in most barbershops is not there, because it's up to the owner too to say, hey, listen, and teach. The mm-hmm. owner should be teaching. If you're owning, if you're an owner, you should be up to par with standards like yeah. customer service and everything else. Yeah. So if that's not there, you imagine everybody else. Remember, most shops has like, I've seen up to 14 chairs. So that's 14 characteristics that you have to, it's all over.
Yeah.
And if the manager himself, the owner, doesn't have everything laid out right, in order, then it's all mayhem. It's not a good experience sometimes. And then again, it becomes a hangout instead of a business.
Yeah, man. I think we definitely covered a lot of ground today in terms of, you know, just opening really people's eyes as to what exactly barbering is and what, you know, what happens, you know, what is the barbering industry? Because I think that a lot of people just really kind of thought about it as
we're not thought of until the weekend. Weekend, they once they get the haircut, they're not said the barbers that we don't think about a barber, we don't think about a hairstyle, we don't think about anything else.
It's true.
So it's only until you need that service that people even think about us.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But you guys are a lot
just,
more
we just need to step it up though in the barber. Of course we are. Of course. I mean, again, we can give our services for free if we want to. We could do events like, say, for the community, for kids, you know, for the elderly or something like that. We could do stuff for free because we love cutting hair. I don't know about anybody else, but me, when I cut hair and they look at themselves in the mirror, that's it. I did a homeless shelter in Bowery Street, and this, I'll never forget this guy. He goes, man, I wish I had some money to tip you, man. I give him, you know, it was like a few barbers giving haircuts for the homeless shelter. He said, I wish I could. I said, you already gave me something. He goes, what do you mean? I said, your expression, you're being happy. When you looked at that yourself in the mirror and like the haircut, that's what you gave me back already.
Mm-hmm.
That's like my fuel. I like that.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps me going. Like stuff like that. I love to put a smile on people's faces, especially, you know, or they're in shock. Like, I didn't even know this was me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bringing them. I'm resurrecting them. I'm, you know, I'm bringing them back to life, and that's a great feeling. I don't know, you know. I've spoken to a lot of barbers, and they never said that to me. You know, that's so weird. I love that feeling. I love bringing people's the energy up. You know, with that, just that. You know, when they look at themselves in that mirror and notice that they're clean. Not to themselves, they look at like they're clean. They're a new person. Yes, it's very important.
Definitely important. It's like you're really instilling some sort of dignity into them. So yeah, no, definitely. So now, Jay Sharp, Mr. Sharps, do you have any, you know, social media links or website links you want to drop at this time? Because, you know, people might be tuning in and they're like, wow, like, this is the type of barber I want in my life. You know, how can I get on his roster? Or maybe they're a barber or somebody in the beauty industry that's listening to this and they're like, oh, how can I partner with this individual to do, you know, more great things in the community? So how can people contact you?
On Instagram, I'm Jay Sharps the Barber. That's JSHARPZTHEBARBER. So that's all one word, Jay Sharps the Barber. My email is JSHARPZ, the letter D, the word barber at AOL.com. So those are the two, you know, you can email me, you can look at me. Also on Facebook is the same thing, Jay Sharps the Barber. You know, anyone could contact me there. I might not respond right away because I'm busy most of the time, but I will get back to you, you know, so. That's,
all right, cool.
That's the connection. Yes, ma'am.
All right, cool. Well, Mr. Jay Sharps, the barber, thank you so much for taking the time to just talk to us about who you are, what you do, and I think most importantly, the importance of what you do.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you for tuning in to another episode of According to RP, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I will talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all on.